Welcome to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
If you have any questions about mortgages or real estate, give us a call at 521-TALK. That's 521-8255 or text 580-580. With Frank Napolitano and Paul Rushforth, here is Steve Gregory.
Oh, it's a room full of brains today.
Double surprise.
Dora is in for Paul, Sherry is in for Frank, and you're stuck with me. Greg is here.
Yay, Greg.
A spectacular last weekend to April.
Yes.
It is.
Hard to believe it's last weekend of April already.
Well, hard to believe we went through all four or three seasons in the last 6 days.
We did that in February, yeah.
We had snow this week. We've had warmth. It's supposed to be 23 degrees tomorrow. So lovely time.
Well, if the market isn't hopping now, it's not going to be, is it?
Well, you know, historically, the 50% of the sales that happen in Ottawa happen in Q2, which we are in now. I think that, you know, there's a lot of apprehension about buying and selling. We're not really sure where the interest rates are going. We're not really sure what is happening with new home buyers. Are people going to stay on the sidelines? Are they going to come in the hopes that the rates will come down at the next little bit? The market is moving. I mean, let's be honest, right? If we look at year to date, we're up in volume of sales from last year. We're up in price, not much, but a little bit from last year. This week, we had another influx of inventory come on the market. And that's really good. The number of listings is trending up. The number of sales is trending up. This week and this week alone, and I think next week's numbers, I mean, if you look sort of microscopically, it's hard to sort of have a very good idea of what's happening. But this week we saw a little bit of a blip and the prices sort of soften. But I think that as the weather gets warmer and people are out, I think we're going to see some good activity in the next few weeks.
If you look at it, though, we're in much better shape than we were last year at this time. I mean, we're more optimistic. We're hoping rates are coming down.
Absolutely.
We have more listings. Prices are up a little bit.
Excuse me.
It's contagious. The throat is contagious.
We're definitely seeing more applications than we have been for the last 6 weeks or so. Pre-approvals, people are interested. I think from the applications we see, it might be that people are a little more selective, perhaps, or maybe anticipating those, you know, different things coming, going down, whether it's the interest rates or what the market's going to look like.
Are people reservedly guarded now as they're
Different than last year, though, when the last few months prior, where we really didn't have, people weren't contacting us about pre-apps or anything like that. People were really staying away. And then the ones we got were people who suddenly a property popped up and needed to apply right away. Whereas now people are preparing. So I think it's kind of just that mental kind of preparation that people are going through now. And I think we'll see that. It's definitely heating up.
Any first timers coming in for pre-apps?
Many.
Yeah.
Mostly. But,
And they would be what now? In their 30s, I guess.
It really depends. I mean, it's all over the place. It depends on how much. Sometimes, personally, my kids are in their early 20s. So their friends are in their early 20s. And sometimes I'm getting calls from parents of those kids trying to say, what can I do now to help my kids? Because I don't want them to wait any longer.
Yeah. And what can they do?
lots of things. Somehow, you know, I've talked about to a lot of different parents about this. So some people want to inject a lot of down payment up front, which is a great option. Some people want to be co-signers or guarantors, as Frank talks about all the time. And some people I'm saying, why don't you, instead of, because they're struggling with, I have two or three kids, how do I give them each this large lump sum of money? And I'm telling them, why don't you just help, instead of giving them this huge sum of money, why don't you just help them with each payment? So set that money aside and help them with each payment instead. And now sometimes that means they also have to co-sign. But it helps parents who maybe don't have the means for $150,000 or something to make something more affordable.
Yeah. I have a client right now who is selling his home, moving out to the East Coast, and sort of advancing his will for his daughter in the sense that he's helping her buy a condo here. And that's, you know, what would have been her inheritance years from now. which is, you know, one way to do it. I do think, though, if you look at how much real estate has gone up on the East Coast, I think, you know, in Ottawa, in Toronto, in Southern Ontario, we are at about 50, 54% from 5 years ago. East Coast, it's about 80%. And so, you know, a lot of people have this, you know, interprovincial migration and going there and purchasing homes that allow them to have extra cash flow. And in this case, you know, helping children along on the other end here in Ontario. So,
are you seeing many reverse mortgages now? Were people trying to help out their kids by getting a reverse mortgage so they can give them some of that money?
Some, for sure. Definitely it's an option. So we have, I mean, there's other options, like Doris said, we're seeing people downsizing and helping, you know, and as a result, using that tremendous, as Frank would say, equity that they've built up in
but
the
But is there that much equity if you're downsizing now? Like, there's not.
It depends if you're staying in the city that you're downsizing from or if you're going out of province.
Like, if I have a single family home and I want to go to a townhome, am I going to be that far ahead in how much money I end up making?
Are you staying in Ottawa and
trading
equity for equity?
If I want to stay in the same neighborhood or close.
That's the biggest challenge with folks who are trying to downsize is that, you know, it's the age-old argument. Well, if I downsize, I'm going to have a smaller house, I'm going to have a smaller lot, and I'm really not going to have that much equity. And so people are staying in their homes much, much longer. Particularly if you're looking to downsize to a bungalow. Bungalows are, you know, they're a hot commodity because...
Always have been.
They always have been, and yet we don't build that many. And it makes sense now because the lot sizes don't allow for certain sizes of homes. But bungalows, young families, people who are downsizing, all sorts of people are looking at bungalows. Even folks who hope to have income from an auxiliary unit downstairs. Bungalows are sometimes easier to manage doing that. So they're a super, super hot commodity. And so their prices tend to stay fairly high. And so downsizing from a great big two-story home to a bungalow doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have more equity. Sorry, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Less, more money. Less work, though.
I actually have two friends who have sold and are... and chose to rent for that reason. So,
right.
I guess time will tell if that's a good plan or not. They also have some kind of familial things that they're not exactly sure where they're going to end up. But I have two friends who have done that.
So. Yeah, thinking has changed so much. It used to be, you would buy a couple of homes, mm-hmm. live in them till almost the day you died, till you really couldn't take care of it anymore, then sell and downsize. Now, I mean, there's so many different ways you can go about it. So what's the right choice? It's right for you, I suppose, as an individual, you got to choose.
Absolutely.
Right choice for you and right choice for your family. And I think looking at what other things you can benefit from, if you don't enjoy gardening anymore, if you don't enjoy cleaning your snow, if you don't enjoy just the regular maintenance that comes with owning a home, then perhaps an apartment or a rental is the perfect solution for you. Or renting a townhome or something like that. It really is an individual choice.
It's also a great way to get rid of the kids if they're still waiting.
That's right. If your children are in their 40s and
right.
still living at home.
I'm sorry, we're downsizing. It has nothing to do with you. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
All this help is fairly recent, though, eh? Within the last 5-10 years where more and more parents are helping out their kids?
Definitely. From our side, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always been some component of that. I mean, back when I got my first house, we were just talking about it in 96, I guess. My parents lent me the money off their line of credit, which was totally fine at that time.
Yeah.
Which happens now, but it has to be.
Well, if you can't trust a banker, who can you trust?
Yes. But, you know, at that time, that was fine. Now it has to be a gift. So there's different things. It's a little bit of a different way to look at things now.
From tax implications,
mm-hmm.
if you gift the money now, is it still tax-free?
If you gift the money?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
As long as you gift the money.
Yes.
So what do you see more of, gifting or people co-signing and helping out in a month-to-month?
Both.
Yeah.
I would say both. And it really depends on the financial circumstances of the giftor, of the parent. One of the things that I think hasn't hit the, government's list of things, but something that I think we should be
talking
about.
Oh, there's a lot to hit the government's list yet.
There are. But more and more people now are not in defined benefit plans for pensions.
Yeah.
So they're not, they don't have. So traditionally, when I grew up, my dad had that pension. My husband and I won't have that defined benefit plan. We've had to self-fund our retirement when we get there. But that makes a dramatic difference in terms of how you get approved for a mortgage and whether you can co-sign or not. So that's a lot of conversations that I'm having right now when someone says, oh, my parents are going to co-sign. It's no problem. They're retired. They've got lots of money. It's great. They have lots of money.
It's got to show the income, though.
It has to show the income. So those are some very strange conversations to be having and educating some of the parents, the retired parents, about how that works.
Which is why probably most would help with the down payment as opposed to...
Depending.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rather than co-signing or guarantoring. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
You must see a lot of creative ways now where people are coming to you for the first time saying, okay, we like our first house now. We'd like to be able to rent this out, or we'd like to be able to go in together.
That's right. So creative's a wonderful way to describe it, right? So everybody's looking to see what options are available to them. I think as a city, things are changing. We're getting more generational living in a lot of our homes. Even some of the builders are now offering floor plans right from the get-go with having multi-generational living. And I think with the new mortgage rules that were just announced, and albeit, you know, it's not a massive difference if you go from a 25-year to a 30-year amortization, but if a first-time home buyer can buy from a builder, buy a multi-generational home, have a parent guarantor that mortgage and move in with them, there's a lot of moving parts there, but people are doing whatever they can to get into home ownership. It's been a very big part of our Canadian retirement over the years.
You'd wake up and you'd go, okay, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have kids, I'm going to buy a house.
Right, right. That order changes and different lifestyles and all sorts of things. But I think ultimately everybody's aspirations are to own a home. And that's not the case for different parts of the world. There are different parts of the world where, you know, you either your home is handed down to you or you just rent for life.
Yeah.
And I think...
Which could be changing to that here.
That's right. Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. So with affordability right now, particularly in you know, the GTA, if you look, the average house there is about $1.2 million.
Yeah.
They expect it to go up to $2 million in the next couple of years on average. If, you know, 80-some% of our immigration goes to the GTA, then will the prices go even higher? One doesn't know, right? So is it just going to become a city of renters?
Yeah. And investors.
That's right.
Really, really rich investors. 521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Dora in for Paul. Sherry is in for Frank. Steve is in for Steve. Greg is here for Greg. All right, Sherry. June 5th. What's going to happen? Because everything I read seems to change every single day.
Well, that's the nature of it, right? That's why when we're talking to clients, we need to not base it on what forecasts are, but based on what's right for the client.
Aside from the forecast, everything seems to be changing day to day. Now we're worried about the Canadian dollar, and if the Canadian dollar goes down, inflation will go up. Look at the price of gas right now.
It's such a balancing act, you know, and then when the jobs reports come out and when all of that kind of stuff, you want it to be good, but not too good. And the same thing with the states, right?
I've never hoped for a bad economy so much in my life.
it's funny. Yeah, no. So the last, one of the predictors that they use is the bond market, obviously the bond market, but the futures on the bond market. And right now the bond market would be saying it's a 65% chance that there's a quarter point raise in June.
Drop, I should say.
Yeah. June, yeah. Sorry.
I was going to kick you off right now.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah. Everybody in panic mode.
Yes, we're all listening. Yep.
And I mean, the other thing that's changed too is the market was predicting that there would be four drops by the end of the year. And now that's down to about 2.4 drops that they're saying. And it's still, I mean, it's not a 90% chance.
Very fluid.
Right? So, yeah. So you have to do what's best for you. You have to look at your circumstance, look at the payment, and see what's best for you.
And now maybe you can explain this to me. It's beautifully sunny out. It's nice and warm, and Hapke's on the line.
Oh, wow.
What's going on, Mike?
You know what? I'm sitting here driving along and actually listening, and I'm like, the IQ level on this show has increased Tremendously.
Isn't it unbelievable?
Unbelievable. I'm like, you know, Paul gone, Frank gone.
I really had to bring my A game today to keep up, you know, Mike.
Oh, my goodness. It's excellent. Excellent content. But listen, great show. And, you know, I just wanted to add a couple things with respect to that capital gains tax and, you know, purchasing rental properties. And what we're starting to see now and more questions coming in is, you know, the actual, you know, is it still worth it? Is it still worth purchasing, you know, that extra property and, you know, what that impact is going to have, especially for individuals that already perhaps already have a significant holding in real estate and what that capital gains, you know, exemption limits might have on them. So
You think there'd be a bit of a fire sale?
You know what? I mean, I think people are looking at their options right now and seeing what's available. You know, the timelines are just too tight, in my opinion. And I think also the government's probably looking for a big tax hit, because I think some people will transact, even in positions where they're, you know, long hold on certain stocks, and they want to crystallize those gains now. You know, that could trigger a lot of tax being paid this year. But we really have to think about our movement going forward with respect to, you know, I've got a friend in Toronto that's purchased a significant number of doors over his lifetime and his career. And now it's like, well, geez, you know, his income tax rate just went up significantly. So now people are starting to look at different options because, you know, there is a lot of, you know, hassle and headaches. And I mean, I was a landlord as well, but there's a lot of challenges, right? When you actually take on, you know, that position of being a landlord. So, you know, is it worth it now? You got to look at that, right?
Well, if you hang on to those properties too, you're going to take quite the hit.
Over
time.
That's
exactly it.
Yeah.
That's right, over time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's becoming a real challenge, no question about that. And that's actually, like I said, that's triggered some calls, you know, back to the MIC, Advanced Mortgage Investment Corp, because, you know, yes, this is a taxed investment. It's an interest income investment. But now with, you know, kind of leveling the playing fields just a little bit more, it's pushing people to look at different options with respect to still investing in real estate, but perhaps not purchasing hard assets.
What are some of the most frequent questions that people are asking you now, Mike?
You know, I mean, it goes back to our market, right? I mean, listen, we're all lucky to be, you know, living, working and playing in such a market that, yes, you know we have economic headwinds. Yes, we know that the transaction levels are down, but we're still in an incredibly, you know, stable market in Ottawa here. You know, with government, with teaching hospitals, with universities and high tech, you know, that employment piece gives us a real quality base of employment. And because of that, the real estate transactions that we do, we rarely see any issues when we lend out privately to the borrowers, simply because there's good, stable real estate values. And, you know, you don't have those big fluctuations. And we know we've had a run up and it's had a bit of a softening. But still, I mean, there's a floor on, you know, where these prices can and will go simply because of the demand and the lack of housing. Right?
So,
and you're pulling from a pretty high quality pool.
Oh, absolutely. Like our credit score within our portfolio at Advanced MIC is, you know, over 730. You know, it is a good quality borrower, but they simply fall outside of the traditional lending guidelines.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why, you know, they come to us in the first place. So they're willing to pay a little bit more now in order to transition to a traditional lender. But, you know, sometimes it's separation, divorce. Sometimes it's a, you know, a second property for a renovation or something of that nature. But, you know, or maybe it's a tax liability that they need to get paid or something of that nature. But the ability to pay and the quality of borrowers still very, very high.
And I'm not surprised there's more interest now with people contacting you wondering about this as an investment compared to before, with so many things that have changed now.
Yep, for sure. You know, the tax. And, you know, the discussions around tax always get people looking at their portfolios and wondering how they can do better. You know, we all know that, you know, we can earn a living, but really trying to save and save for the future. Even Sherry talking about, you know, how parents can help kids and how their kids can get started now. You got to start looking at those options and a nice steady rate of return year over year. The biggest factor and the biggest impact, yeah, of course, rate of return, but it's time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You need that time to grow that portfolio and to grow that asset and that compounding effect that we always talk about in investment. It's so important.
How do we get a hold of you, Mike? How do I find out more?
Yeah, you can check out, there is a link on the Mortgage Brokers Ottawa website. That is our sister company, but advancedmic.com, advancedmic.com, or 613-656-0866. And when I was on the other weekend, a couple of weekends ago, your show was replaying on the Sunday, and I happened to be in the car at the time, and right after the segment, my phone rang. So it was, I stand corrected. People do listen to your show.
I thought you were going to say you were so impressed you called yourself. Hey, what's your title these days, Mike?
I am the president and CEO at Advanced Mortgage Investment Corp. In fact, I'm the president or the CEO at Mortgage Brokers Ottawa, and Sherry is our esteemed president.
I know. So I was just going to say, I have two presidents that I'm talking to. It's pretty exciting for me, Mike.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
521 Talk, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the Real Estate and Mortgage Show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show. Dora's here. Sherry's here. All right. You mentioned listings were up. Are we well over 4,000 now? Or?
We're at about, no, we're not over 4,000.
Weren't we about 4,000?
We were. We're still at about 4,000. We're at 3735.
Well, that's not
morning.
Up. What are you talking about?
3735 this morning with 422 conditional sales. As this morning as well, and 671 rentals on the market right now.
Did you see a lot more movement this week compared to, say, 3 weeks ago?
This week was a tiny bit quieter, but the 2 weeks leading up to this week were much busier, and I think next week is going to be very, very busy just based on the number of listings that are out there and just the number of showings that we are getting on our listings.
Where do you think we're going to be April to April when the numbers come out next week?
Oh, you ask tough questions.
Hey, it's only your opinion.
Some
you could be wrong.
I think that for volume of sales, we will be up again. For sure.
And the price up a smidge?
I think the price up a smidge. It is so dependent on the areas. So if we look at Ottawa as a global whole, our market is so diverse and wide. Like we go all the way from Dunrobin down quite a bit south past Kempville all the way out to Rockland. And so each neighborhood is going to behave very, very differently from every other neighborhood. And so prices could be up in one area, they could be stagnant or down in another area. Overall, I think it'll be a smidge up, yes.
And I guess it depends what's available in each particular area, right?
That's right. It's all down to inventory, right? Yeah. It's supply and demand. And as the demand is staying more or less the same and the supply is increasing, maybe we'll see a bit of a slowdown. But that's a wonderful thing for buyers. If you are out there, if you are looking to buy, if this is your first home, there you have the luxury of time. You can go and see a house. You can go and see it a second time. You can see it in the daytime. You can see it, you know, at different times of the day and really get an idea of what you're buying. You have the option to put in, you know, building inspection clauses, which, you know, I'm a big, big advocate for trying to get the entire board on board with having pre-listing inspections. I think that would benefit everybody.
Yeah.
But that
should be a must. It really should be.
Well, it should be a must. But the other thing, too, is building inspectors are not a regulated body. They don't have to be licensed.
No, I know. So, I could do it tomorrow.
That's right. You could.
And how much faith would you have in
well,
me?
Well,
I think it should be regulated. And it should be mandatory once it is.
Well, I think it would be a very good idea if everybody was on board and doing the same thing, because every single seller would know what they were up against with their home. Every single buyer would be on an equal playing field and know what they are purchasing. And there aren't any surprises. And the thing is, when you go and you buy a house and you put in a conditional offer and you spend the money on a building inspection and you discover issues that you cannot see with the naked eye when you're going through your showings, you know, it takes a very good team of realtors to then negotiate between buyer and seller, because you've got a willing seller, you've got a willing buyer, and it's a matter of making something happen.
Well, you can't buy a car without a safety.
That's right. Well, and once something is discovered, it has to be like publicly told to everyone else. So you might as well know from the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this question?
Oh, hit me.
It's coming Sherry's way.
Oh good.
How many times do the rates have to come down before there's any real impact?
Oh, my goodness. That's a question that I can't answer. Who can answer that question?
Is a quarter point going to make any difference?
So what's happened?
Other than attitude, I mean?
Well, don't forget that what's happened, actually, is that Bank of Canada rate has remained the same. But of course, as Frank talks about, the bond market, the five-year bond market has changed and it's been up and down and continues to be up and down. And then it doesn't seem, it's up about 20 points right now, higher than it was, let's say, 3 weeks ago. But it hasn't made a material difference on the five-year rates, actually.
Yeah.
So there's more pressure on those rates than there were before. So it seems like the fixed rates haven't been changing a lot.
If it comes down a quarter point, will the fixed rate change?
I think that's probably already built into the market
right now.
Right? So it's hard to say. I mean, we're still more than a month away from that next, but I feel like that's built into the market. But we're seeing more people right now who are kind of, we're seeing way more inquiries. We're seeing way more applications. I think people are kind of on that edge. I think the other thing is, honestly, that discussion wherever, media wherever, about rates, I think has overblown some things as well. I think
so.
We
it's
really
overrated. My apologies.
even clients who are calling me now.
That's the whole reason I asked that question was just to get that
just
answer.
To get that.
Even clients who are calling now about maturities that are coming up, and we're having those conversations. I think when they're calling, they're realizing that the payment isn't as bad as they were bracing themselves for.
And most of those people were in fixed rates anyway, right? Like over 70%.
It's going to depend on, theoretically. I mean, I guess it's just a matter of, so when people are calling, the first thing we usually talk about is, what can you afford? What's your monthly payment? And let's talk about that. So I'm also seeing people, I had a client last week who, expectations are a little different, and she's looking at buying a smaller condo. And having a, rather than the, I need to get the, 2,400 square foot townhome with quartz countertops and everything I think people are kind of going that way more than they are saying, I'm going to abandon the market.
Well, I think even with a quarter point drop in interest rates, it will depend on if we see an uptick in pricing because of that drop, right? So it's supply and demand again. And we've been in a housing crisis for many, many years, particularly the last couple of years. And yes, the budget that came out last week is going to try to alleviate some of those pressures. But the reality is, if the rates come down a little bit and we see people that have been on the sidelines sort of have this like sense of optimism and this weight taken off them, and they decide to come into the market, well, then what happens to the prices at that point, right?
Yeah. So I think the next 2 years are big for renewals, right? That's when the real crunch is going to come.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen somewhere between 60 and 70% of all mortgages are maturing in the next.
Yeah, I think it's 23% in 2025 and over 30% in 2026.
Yeah.
And another 21% in 2027. Mm-hmm. Just off the top of my head.
Yes.
But those are the ones that are going to make a crucial difference, because when they all come up for renewal, if the rates are still high, then we're in trouble, right?
And we may see, too, don't forget, there's lots of people in 2021, 2020, 2022 who were looking at taking advantage of the great interest rates and buying before, trying to get into the next step up, and kept their previous home as a rental. And when those mortgages mature, those ones, we may see a supply opportunity there as they come off there. I'm certainly have some of my own clients who have opted to say, rather than renew my mortgage, I'm going to list it.
But now with the capital gains implications, what happens there?
But investors may be selling those and then free them up for more people to be able to buy those.
Which would
homes.
Be so great, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and sort of, backtracking a little bit to the capital gains tax. I think whether we're going to see a fire sale or not in residential properties, I'm not really sure. But where we may see a bit of a fire sale in the next little bit, but the timelines are very, very tight, is perhaps on recreational properties. So if you have a cottage that you are not using, if you have a cottage that has come to you through inheritance and you're not using, and you think, oh gosh, if I hold on to it a little bit longer, I'm going to have these extra tax implications. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a few of those properties come up in the next week or so to try to close before the 25th of June.
Yeah, which is tight, though. It's a pretty
tight
timeline.
It's very tight. But, you know, if you're looking for a cottage, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, and if you're looking to sell a cottage,
this is the time to do it. That's right.
Don't forget on those capital gains, too, for the houses that for the people who moved in 2020 or 2021, you would have established the value of that property because it would have been your primary residence until then.
Yeah.
So it would have been the growth from 2021 to now.
Yeah.
So that, depending on the house, should fall within the capital gains allowance that we still have
future, right?
So definitely, I think that potentially could create a
If you bought last year, then the growth in the past year, you're laughing because it's not so bad. Whew, thank God I didn't make much money this year. 521-TALK, 521-8255. We'll be right back.
We return to Open House, the real estate and mortgage show on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back to the show. Dora here.
Hello.
Sherry's here. Frank's not. Paul's not. The day to celebrate today.
Oh, boy.
All right. End of April. So
yes.
Homes have got to start looking pretty now. Grass
they
has got to be green. Landscape's got to be taken care of.
That's right. Time to rake up the leaves from last year. To prune all of the little bushes, to make the streetscape look lovely, to wash your windows. We're sort of at that time of year right now where the sun is staying up quite late. And so at sunset, it comes in through the windows. And if your windows are dirty from the winter, boy, oh boy, does that not show well for a showing.
And you know what the first thing people do for some reason when you're looking at a house? You look out the window.
That's right, to see what the view is.
You're there to see what the house looks like. And the first thing, and I've done it many times, straight to the window, whether it's I'm in the bedroom, the living room, I'm looking out.
Well, I think that, to be honest with you, I think it's a really good thing to do because you can't change the location of your home.
Yeah.
The inside of the house, you can, you know, with money and with imagination, you can change the inside, you can renovate, you can update, you can do all sorts of things, but you can't change the location of your home. So I think it's really important to clean your windows so that people like Steve, when they come over, they look out the windows.
and don't get me wrong, I never peer in, only out.
So it is a very, it's a good time. And, spring cleaning, particularly if your house is going up for sale or if your house is for sale, do take the extra time to, you know, freshen it up, put things away, make it feel nice, clean and airy. It's that time of year. And I think, you know, have some flowers out, do all sorts of things. And it just makes people feel more at home. And the more buyers want to spend time in your house, the more it will become a home for them.
Where are we at right now with people having to update what they have in their home in order to be able to sell it? Is there an appetite for a home that hasn't got all the bells and whistles?
If it is
priced
worth
putting the money
appropriately?
In?
If it is priced appropriately, I think, you know, there are certain people who, obviously life is expensive, the interest rates are high, everything, and so affordability is down. And so if a home that needs updating is priced appropriately, there's still going to be interest in it. The challenge comes when sellers have expectations that their home is going to sell at the same price as another home which has had renovations put in over the years. And that's where we're seeing some of those homes stay on the market a little bit longer.
What are the expectations of sellers these days? Do they still think we're back 2 years ago for home prices?
Maybe not 2 years ago, but like maybe a year and 11 months ago. So
I knew I was way off.
so there are, you know, it's our job as realtors to show comparables, to talk about the trends, to talk about all sorts of things. It is very difficult for a seller if they have seen homes on their street transact for 100, 200, 250 more than what we're coming in
and telling them. It's an education, though.
It is an education, and it's a process, right? Everybody wants to try to price their home a little bit higher, see what the market will bear. It's not advisable because we're a very conservative market in Ottawa.
Yeah.
The list price to sale price hovers around the 98%. So if you're not really in that range, there are a lot of buyers that are going to maybe dismiss your house or not even come in to see your home, and it might be the perfect place for them. So be realistic with what expectations are. Be patient. Listen to the expert that you've hired to help you. And hopefully
that is an expert.
That's right. Well, and then really what you can do as a seller is just make sure that your home is in tip-top shape.
You know what's funny is the rates are not horrible. They're horrible compared to 3 years ago. But you can get a five-year for 489.
You can.
It's not
high ratio.
It's not disastrous, though.
It's not.
You know,
it's
we're not 8, 9, 10%.
Mm-hmm. But it's the price of the homes, right?
Oh, you know what? I was just going super optimistic.
let me get my pin
and here
out for
comes
your bubble.
Dora with a hammer.
just like I said, you got to be realistic.
You know, when I bought my first home, I had roommates and I had, you know, to help me out, even in rates were lower. Prices were lower. Actually, rates weren't lower. That's a lie. Prices were lower, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, lots of people are, I was talking to friends this weekend, and they're looking at, they have some kids who are my age, or my kids' age, in their early 20s, and they're looking at, their kids are paying rent. They're looking at buying a house for their kids and some of their friends to move in. And that's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Are there many hoops to jump through if you want to buy a house with a friend? Is it any different than buying a house with a common law partner, a wife, a husband?
Nope. We just declare what it is up front. How, you know, we have to state what the relationship is. But no, I mean, where it gets difficult is when you really can't have more than four people typically.
On a mortgage.
And of course, the risk for the buyer, you know, having four people who are independently related, that's a challenge if somebody wants to sell and others don't. But definitely we've seen two friends, two cousins, two, you know, brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. all of that kind of stuff.
See, I would think a triplex would be perfect. You go in with a friend on a triplex, you take two of the three, you rent one out.
If you can find one, right?
Right.
Well, that's where Dora comes in. Find me a triplex.
Well, it's more like a three-bedroom townhome.
Yeah.
Right. So with budgeting constraints, and it's a great idea. If you've got three young people or two young people that are willing to live together, brother and a sister, buddies, friends, whoever.
It's a great way to start, though.
It is a great way to start. It is a really great way to start because you start building equity. You've got, you know, home maintenance that you get acclimatized to. You do all sorts of things. It's a great way to start.
What's the biggest hoop right now? Qualifying? Qualifying still trouble?
Yes.
With those stupid 2 points and taking variable out of the equation because who the heck wants to qualify at 8.25?
Well, that's definitely a challenge for some people. The conversations that we're having, of course, are, you know, here's what's the best term for you, and then let's see if you can qualify for that term, really. And that might be.
But it really is taken out of the equation. Like, you should have the choice. You really don't have a choice in going variable if you're close because you have to qualify so much higher.
And if you remember, it was the reverse 2 years ago when we were at variable. People were qualifying at 525, maybe variable wasn't the right product for them at that time. So it works both ways. I agree with Frank absolutely that we should have a qualifying rate and then go from there rather than locking people into a term as a result of that.
Yeah, and or making it two points over. You know, pick your rate and.
Pick your rate or pick the approval rate, I think makes the most sense.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For all, though.
Yeah. And don't forget, I mean, that rate hasn't changed through all of this. I mean, I think it, you know, so that rate isn't very nimble. That's kind of it's.
Yeah, it was easier going 2 points over when you could get a mortgage for two.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ooh, I qualified at four.
That's right. And thank goodness. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
I got nothing.
Go ahead. Bring another hammer down. That's fine.
Oh, come on.
Dora, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What if you're going to paint, how how white do you have to paint the walls these days? Is it super light? Maybe Greg can help with that.
I would say stay away maybe from the grays. Grayish.
The grays like were so popular.
The grays are so popular. They are losing a little bit of popularity, I think. And I think it just feels, I think grayish.
And trim white.
Yeah, trim white. Well, I mean, to your preference when you're living there, if you are looking to sell, I would paint the trim white.
Yeah,
yes.
And it pops. Looks great in Greg's photos.
It looks great. It looks great.
Anything you want to say to anybody? Any hellos?
Oh, I do. I want to say hello to a long, how did you know?
Unbelievable.
We're just connected. So longtime listener, Brian, hello. I had the opportunity to meet your son yesterday, and I hear you're a longtime listener to the show. So hi to you.
And the show would not be the same without you listening. Sherry, you got any birthdays or anything?
Absolutely. Well, we have Dan Karpinski, one of our agents. Also, fun fact, he was in my wedding party 25 years ago. His birthday
was
on.
Does he remember that?
I'm not sure. That was April 25th. And we just wanted to let Brent, one of our agents, he's going through a bit of a tough time, and we wanted to let him know that we're thinking about him.
We certainly are. Yeah. Well, that was a great hour. I learned much more than I regularly do. Have a great week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.